Thank you. After more than 10 years of developing and implementing an effective community-based program to delay second pregnancies among teenage mothers, we were asked to develop a program for adolescent males. At that time, which was almost 9 years ago, we knew a lot about teenage mothers, but we knew almost nothing about adolescent males. When we began to talk to people about male programs at that time, we heard statements such as, guys won't come to group, guys don't want to learn. Well, our experience with Peer Advocates for Health, a program for teenage African-American adolescent males on the south side of Chicago, proves just the opposite to be true. Guys do want to learn. The only problem is nobody's ever given them any information, or at least any correct information, and they will come to group. And when they spend several months checking each other out, the group actually becomes a strong support system. Now, Peer Advocates for Health was designed to increase reproductive health knowledge and improve lifestyle choices among adolescent male participants. What I'd like to do today is give you a brief description of the program model, give you a few of the selected outcomes, talk about the responses of the young men themselves about why they joined the program and what they got out of being in Peer Advocates, and finally some lessons learned. Peer Advocates for Health provides intense reproductive health training and ongoing individual support for young men ages 14 to 18 who live in neighborhoods on the south side of Chicago. After 6 months of training, these young men work in their own schools and communities as peer advocates, talking to school groups, church groups, the football team, about issues regarding male health, including contraception, conception, STIs, and healthy relationships. Since 2000, 160 young men from 33 high schools have been trained. And these peer advocates have reached 6,000 other adolescents and distributed 30,000 condoms on the south side of Chicago. The Peer Advocate Program is supported by DHHS Region 5, Office of Family Planning through Title 10, and by the Illinois Department of Human Services. Now, Peer Advocates serves young men who live in inner city neighborhoods on the south side of Chicago. These neighborhoods, like many inner city neighborhoods across the country, are characterized by high rates of poverty, school dropout, unemployment, the rates of teen pregnancy, STIs, and HIV/AIDS are some of the highest in the country. A majority of the households are female-headed, and these guys have very few positive male role models. Now, there are three primary components of the Peer Advocate Program model: intense training through group participation, individual support through personal relationship, and employment in community outreach activities. Each year, Peer Advocates provides intense training and follow-up to between 20 and 25 young men ages 14 to 17 who are in high school. After long-term training, these youth work in their own schools and communities as role models and provide information. Within the Peer Advocate Program model, both training and individual support are ongoing throughout the program year. Peer Advocate training begins with an initial 8-week training during the summer, 3 days a week. Continued peer education training is carried out through weekly group meetings after school throughout the program year, October through June. In order to provide the level of individual support we feel are necessary for these young men, the number of participants is limited to between 15 and 25 each year. The project coordinator develops a strong, ongoing personal relationship with each one of these young men. He serves as mentor, role model, friend, and confidant to each participant. He provides the weekly group meetings, spends many Saturday sessions in follow-up or doing community outreach, and he also meets individually with each one of these young men and maintains close contact with the young man's family and his school. Now, our coordinator is 6 feet 10 inches tall, so he has a very commanding presence. But he also spends the personal time and effort to get to know and support each one of these guys personally. Now, peer advocates are paid to come to training. They're paid an hourly stipend. And training includes not just reproductive health. We focus on job skills, time management, computer skills, application processes. Peer advocates are paid for their community outreach. And community outreach can take a number of different forms. They may be talking to their biology class in high school. They may be going to a women's shelter. They may be talking to Girl Scouts or their football team. Or one-on-one with their peers. Condom distribution is an important part of peer advocate outreach. Peer advocates receive condoms at every weekly group meeting, and they carry condoms with them in little condom wallets, which are velour wallets with two condoms and written instructions about how to use a condom. And the peer advocates carry these with them and, as I said, have distributed 30,000 on the south side of Chicago. Now, evaluation has been an integral part of the program since it started. This is a small program with very few participants each year, so we use qualitative as well as quantitative data to assess the impact of program participation. Specific data collection activities carried out each year include written participant questionnaires at intake, 3 months, 6 months, and 12 months. Attendance logs and community outreach logs. And the community outreach logs give who they talked to, what they talked about, and for how long. We had to quit paying for pillow talk, but we do know who they talked to and for how long. And the qualitative feedback is obtained through group interviews, parent questionnaires, and group discussion. Now, the program started in June of 2000, and between 2000 and 2008, 160 adolescent males have been trained, and they attend 33 different high schools on the South Side. At the time they joined peer advocates, the average age was 15.9, 65% had prior sexual experience, 22% reported not using a condom at last sex, and 79% had never been to a clinic for reproductive health services. Now, at the end of each program year, we look at participant outcomes, which reflect the primary goals of the program to increase reproductive health knowledge and lifestyle choices among program participants. Significant increases in reproductive health knowledge have been found using pre-post test. Communication about birth control has increased for partners and peers, but not for parents. And utilization of clinic services for reproductive health has increased significantly after 6 months of participation in peer advocates. Each year, between 15 and 25 young men join peer advocates. And the summer basic camp is analogous to boot camp. It is designed to weed out any of the young men who aren't really serious about becoming a peer advocate. There's homework, there's dress code, no do-rags, no belts at the crotch, no heavy gold chains. And disruptive behavior in the group is punished by either a pay cut or asking the young man to leave the group. This straightforward approach to retention in the group has been learned over time and is necessary for the functioning of the group. Now, as it turns out, between a third and a half of the young men do leave after the summer training or during the summer training. Some of them don't want to work that hard. Some of them are asked to leave. And then when fall training begins, there are a few every year who can't come because of football practice. But overall, we have about a third of the young men who remain in the group each year, and these are tremendous young guys. Now, in terms of trying to understand the retention, we looked at participant responses to why they join peer advocates. They're recruited through a number of channels, word of mouth now that we've been in operation for 9 years, clinic referrals or pediatricians. You can see that the reasons they join vary from for a new take on life and to learn new things, something to do for the summer and get paid for, because I was trying to stay off the streets. I was getting paid for a good cause. We anticipated that there would be a difference in reasons for why they joined the peer advocates between those who left and those who remained with the program. We found no such difference. There was really relatively no difference in the reasons given about why they joined. Money was a big issue. But we did not find the expected differences that we thought we would find. But then when we asked the young men what they got out of being in the peer advocate program, and this is after 3 months of participation, the responses were varied, but they did center on getting new information and what they learned. And after almost 10 years of working with adolescent males, from 9 different groups of peer advocates, we have learned a lot. Year after year, our peer advocate program experience does suggest that these young men do want to learn. They're like sponges, but they require intensive and ongoing training because they come in with very little information, and a lot of the information they come in with is wrong. At the end of the year questionnaire, when I asked what they liked best about being in peer advocates, the young men said getting new information and that what I learned was relevant to everyday life. And that's the key. The training has to be relevant to their day-to-day situations and their day-to-day life. And these guys will come to group. After the initial training, when those who are not really interested or don't want to do the work, during the summer dropout, attendance is not a problem, and in fact, the group becomes a strong support network for these young guys. And once they're trained, they are very eager and enthusiastic about sharing their information with others. We weren't sure this would be the case, but it most definitely is. Although the Peer Advocate Project can train only a small number of young men each year, it does provide a mechanism through their peer advocate work. And they have talked to 6,000 other kids and distributed 30,000 condoms. It's a mechanism to get this badly needed information out into the broader community. Thank you.
Okay, we'll open the floor for questions for any of the speakers.
Any major differences in the background, but there is an application procedure, and I should emphasize that they have to apply. There's an interview, and the current peer educators, the peer advocates interview the young men. Last year we had 75 applicants for 25 slots. So the current peer advocates are the ones who choose the young men to come in for the next year. But I have not, we have no real identifiers. If they're really in a bad situation or their life is just in shatters, they won't be able to the program anyway.
Right. Thank you.
This question is for Pat also. What is the recruitment process if you get 75 people wanting to apply? How do they find out about the program? And then the second part to that question is, at the end of the year, is the group done and a brand new group starts, or do people carry over if they're still in high school?
I'll answer the second question first. And they can remain in the program as long as they want to until they graduate from high school. Well, yeah, until they graduate from high school. We've had some young men to be in the program for 5 years and several for 2 and 3. But we keep them in peer advocates until they graduate from high school. We have about a third of the young men who are now in college, and these were guys who've never even thought about college until they got. But that took 2 or 3 years working with the project coordinator and staying in the program. Recruitment. We started this project from scratch, and at that point we put up flyers in health clinics. The coordinator went to 20 high schools and talked with the principals and the guidance counselors. He still does that every year. He goes back to 20 or 25 high schools and talks personally with the guidance counselors. But we've trained so many now that there is a word of mouth that is since. Sends young men to us every year.
Question also for Pat. In terms of incentives and the employment status, what findings or consequences, negative and positive, have you found with generating income for 14-year-olds in this program? And do you incorporate money management skills into the
program? When they first join the program, that's why most of them join, because they know they're going to get paid, and they look on this as a job. After they've been in it for a year or more, then they wouldn't care if they were paid or not, because they really like getting out there with the information, and they like getting the information as their responses show. The pay cuts or the docking in pay for misbehavior in group has been very effective. They get little cards, and this is a pay. That worked very well. And in terms of hours, we're very tightly funded. So sometimes we cannot give them as many hours out in the community as we would, if they would like to do or we would like to do, but it's just a financial restraint.
Mm-hmm. In the back?
This question follows that one really, really well. I'm curious as to what the annual program cost is by year and how much of that is broken down into paying the students as well as condom supplies and other educational materials.
We beg our condoms anytime we can. let's see. The budget last year was $150,000. This year it's less than that. And we have between 10 and 15 active peer advocates out in the field. We have two that have been in the program for 4 years and are out of high school, but they're staying with us because they're not into college yet. And they're very valuable because we don't take our guys out of school to do school presentations. So the guys who have graduated are the ones doing the in-school presentation. But the actual pay for the peer advocates, you know, I don't know the actual proportion. I would say it would be about 20%, but I'm guessing.
Anybody else?
Are you locally funded?
No, we're funded. Yes, we are, but it's DHHS. We're funded through DHHS Region 5 office, through their Office of Family Planning, but it's Title 10 money, so it's local and federal.
There was another, yeah, in the back.
two questions. The first, I was wondering if you had any issues at all with youth being members of gangs, or if there were problems with youth from rival gangs wanting to join the same group. And secondly, did you have the permission of the school district to distribute condoms in school, or was that not part of the
program? Gang issues are an issue. We have to be very careful. I didn't mention we have an after-school drop-in center for guys, and we have that in our office, and our office has to be in a gang-neutral location, which it is. Our major problem, our guys aren't gangbangers. They're not in the program if they're gangbangers. Our problem becomes if they need tutoring, and we find a tutoring program in a park district, they can't go to the park districts because it's the wrong gang territory. Those are the kind of issues we have to deal with in terms of getting services for our guys and where those services are located. And in terms of school permission for condom distribution, we've had counselors ask us for condoms, and we haven't made an official issue of that. Everybody knows they're doing it, but no one has ever said don't do it. And a lot of the condom distribution is out of school, on the street. Because once our guys are identified as first having information and having condoms, people come to them. And in fact, getting condoms is a big issue for us because they cost a lot of money. Thank you.
Maybe start with the second one. I highlighted the low levels of knowledge and that. So the program made plans, and in the next cycle of funding, we only have funding. Unfortunately, we're not able to get funding to continue to pursue our in-school activities. So we do have funding to continue out-of-school activities, and there we'll be focusing on ensuring that we definitely have better messages to reach them, improve the quality of information, and also undertake more frequent process evaluations to ensure that we're actually reaching them and whether they're reviewing the curriculum, for example, to make sure that we are getting them. Because what we were doing is we were training youth, and we were using the curriculum to train the youth, and then they were the ones who were tasked with reaching their peers with that information. Now, what they do during their sessions could be they might decide to focus on other areas and not really focus on HIV. We did look at the use of contraception, and I showed the results. When we looked at married youth, we found that there was a higher rate of contraceptive use amongst married youth. So at least that was a positive result, that they were actually using something. I do agree that the question about sexual debut, when you looked at the results, the females in the intervention area, you did find a plateau where it reached 62%, and none after those were actually admitting having had sex. So I agree that it's a reported behavior, that some of them might have been understating. Because they knew the answer that we were seeking from them.
More questions? No? Thank you. Oh, I missed you. I'm sorry.
So, can you repeat that radio program?
Yeah, you had mentioned the radio program. Uh-huh. Can you elaborate a little bit more about it in terms of the messages that were incorporated and how it fit into the program?
Overall program. So, the radio program was, what we did is we set up boxes in both in the youth clubs, in and out of school, and we asked the youth to write down the topics that they wanted to discuss or to hear about on the radio, and we used that information to design the program. The program was broadcast once a week, half an hour, on the same day, Sunday afternoon. And we also trained radio promoters within the community. And they were tasked with ensuring that community members had access to radio, because you might find that not everyone in the community had a radio and was able to listen to it. And so they would have a radio posted somewhere, and then they would encourage community members to gather there, and then they'll listen to the program and facilitate a discussion and also get feedback about the quality of the radio program. Does that answer your question?
Any more? Thank you very much for coming. Thank you, panel members, for an excellent panel.
Yeah.
We actually started the study just looking at all internet strategies.
And we thought that we were going to do a lot of Facebook, and there's tons of other social networking sites too. There's Zanga and all these, but the clinics that we work with particularly is MySpace. So that's what we, that's just what we ended up focusing on. And I think that a lot of people said Facebook is more for either college students or high school students who are college bound, so maybe they have older siblings or friends who are already in college, so then they get into Facebook that way. But the high risk for, I mean, this is just anecdotal, but the high risk teens tend to use MySpace more.
And it turns research out, on that, I would work with a group of peer educators for the Red Cross,
to see if we got, we should have them in here. I thought I'd put them in here, but if not, I think I did. No, my luck, I probably didn't. You know what? Then put them there. This is most important in my corner. That works good. Has everybody got their, are you able to figure out where the, to extract, Carl, the,
maybe resume the training?
I can reach out and touch it.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's violent.
Escape.